The emotions of that brief space, while she stood gazing after the crooked figure of old Roger Chillingworth, threw a dark light on Hester's state of mind, revealing much that she might not otherwise have acknowledged to herself. He being gone, she summoned back her child.
"Pearl! Little Pearl! Where are you?"
Pearl, whose activity of spirit never flagged, had been at no loss for amusement while her mother talked with the old gatherer of herbs. At first, as already told, she had flirted fancifully with her own image in a pool of water, beckoning the phantom forth and, as it declined to venture, seeking a passage for herself into its sphere of impalpable earth and unattainable sky. Soon finding, however, that either she or the image was unreal, she turned elsewhere for better pastime. She made little boats out of birch bark, and freighted them with snail shells, and sent out more ventures on the mighty deep than any merchant in New England, but the larger part of them foundered near the shore. She seized a live horseshoe by the tail, and made prize of several five fingers, and laid out a jellyfish to melt in the warm sun. Then she took up the white foam that streaked the line of the advancing tide, and threw it upon the breeze, scampering after it with winged footsteps to catch the great snowflakes ere they fell. Perceiving a flock of beach birds that fed and fluttered along the shore, that naughty child picked up her apron full of pebbles, and creeping from rock to rock after these small sea fowl, displayed remarkable dexterity in pelting them. One little gray bird with a white breast, Pearl was almost sure had been hit by a pebble, and fluttered away with a broken wing. But then the elf child sighed and gave up her sport, because it grieved her to have done harm to a little being that was as wild as the sea breeze, or as wild as Pearl herself. Her final employment was to gather seaweed of various kinds and make herself a scarf or mantle and a headdress, and thus assume the aspect of a little mermaid. She inherited her mother's gift for devising drapery and costume. As the last touch to her mermaid's garb, Pearl took some eelgrass and imitated as best she could on her own bosom the decoration with which she was so familiar on her mother's. A letter. The letter A, but freshly green instead of scarlet. The child bent her chin upon her breast and contemplated this device with strange interest, even as if the one only thing for which she had been sent into the world was to make out its hidden import.
"I wonder if Mother will ask me what it means," thought Pearl.
Just then she heard her mother's voice, and flitting along as lightly as one of the little seabirds, appeared before Hester Prynne, dancing, laughing, and pointing her finger to the ornament upon her bosom.
"My little Pearl," said Hester, after a moment's silence, "the green letter, and on thy childish bosom, has no purport. But dost thou know, my child, what this letter means which thy mother is doomed to wear?" "Yes, mother," said the child, "it is the great letter A. Thou hast taught me in the hornbook."
Hester looked steadily into her little face, but though there was that singular expression which she had so often remarked in her black eyes, she could not satisfy herself whether Pearl really attached any meaning to the symbol. She felt a morbid desire to ascertain the point.
"Dost thou know, child, wherefore thy mother wears this letter?" "Truly do I," answered Pearl, looking brightly into her mother's face. "It is for the same reason that the minister keeps his hand over his heart." "And what reason is that?" asked Hester, half smiling at the absurd incongruity of the child's observation, but on second thoughts turning pale. "What, has the letter to do with any heart save mine?" "Nay, mother, I've told all I know," said Pearl, more seriously than she was wont to speak. "Ask yonder old man whom thou hast been talking with. It may be he can tell. But in good earnest now, mother dear, what does this scarlet letter mean, and why dost thou wear it on thy bosom, and why does the minister keep his hand over his heart?"